Hi, this is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. Tonight, music and conversation in WMUK's Takeda Studio with drummer Keith Hall, host of Jazz Currents. He's with a longtime friend and musical collaborator. Here's Keith with an introduction.
Today's guest is pianist and composer Matthew Fries. He's the winner of the Great American Jazz Piano Competition, and his performances and recordings have garnered rave reviews. He's here with us in the studio. Matthew Fries, welcome.
Thank you so much, Keith. Happy to be here.
You're from Selins Grove, Pennsylvania, and in 1994, you made the big move to New York City. You've been working a lot as a sideman and doing some gigs and as a leader as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess it's probably appropriate that we start with some music so we can hear you.
Okay. I thought I'd play this a tune of mine I recorded on my very first record I did, which I recorded pretty much soon after I moved to New York, the late 90s sometime. And we'll see how it works as a solo piano tune. This will be a little different. It's entitled The Riddle. Thank you.
Yeah, The Riddle. And that was from your first recording?
Yeah, it's a record called Song for Today, which came out on a Swiss record label.
That got some really great reviews, I remember.
It got a couple of nice mentions, yeah. I think Jazz Is picked it as one of their favorite records of the year. So very flattered when that happens.
It's always nice to be mentioned, right?
It is.
Well, it's really a joy for me to sit back and listen to you play as a soloist. People might know that we play together a lot.
Yeah.
But it's really great to sit back and just listen to you and just enjoy what you're doing. I love that tune. I love the bass line that you've created for that tune. You always seem to come up with some cool little bass lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't just come up with a piano part, but you have some very, very specific things laid out when you write.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, there's, you know, piano, obviously you can play more than one note at a time. And you know, so many of the jazz compositions that we know and that have kind of lasted, you know, are the horn player tunes that are basically a melody and you're free to interpret it however. And, you know, so a lot of times when I'm doing some writing, I'm drawn to some of the other textures, especially, you know, if you're writing for a group, you know, just why does the melody always have to be the top voice? Why can't it come from the bass? And maybe it's something that the bass player and the left hand of the pianist play together or you know, combinations like that so that it adds a little depth a little depth and a little kind of permanence to the arrangement as well.
I remember learning some of these songs with you years ago on a gig, and you and the bassist, Greg Ryan, had quite a history of playing these songs.
Yeah.
And I was kind of added to the group, and I didn't know any of the music. I didn't know what the songs were called.
Yeah, that's true. We would just kind of start playing them and just...
No announcement. You would just start playing the song.
Well, yeah, it was just a background, you know, restaurant gig that they happened to have a really nice piano and happened to just let us play what we wanted and loved that. But, you know, it wasn't like anybody was on the microphone, you know, no, for the next tune we'll be able to, you know, it was really a workshop to just play what we wanted. And yeah.
Well, it was fun too, because I would hear these songs and it took me months to know what they were even called,
mm-hmm.
but you would just start playing them. And I remember hearing all the parts and, oh yeah, this is the one with that really neat bass line and that one intro. But every tune was, like you said, the way you write, how you put the parts together gives some sort of a permanence to the arrangement. And mm-hmm. so everything was very clear,
mm-hmm.
you know, on how it was supposed to be. And it was easy to follow
okay.
for me as a player. And it made it easy to learn the songs,
uh-huh,
even
uh-huh.
though they're pretty difficult. Complicated.
I tend to be a kind of a traditionalist in far as, you know, what I hear for the, I mean, it's not bebop, I guess, at all. And it is something different, but a lot of the melodies that I write tend to be pretty diatonic. And there's a lot of, you know, little themes and motives that I kind of reuse to try to get them to hang together as a melody and as an idea. So I think that's part of what makes them easy to hear your way through. As you were having to do on that gig,
right.
You know, there's hopefully there's something there that even the listener is able to hang on to, because it's, you know, it's familiar and memorable enough. And so the interest has to come from somewhere else, you know, from the interpretation and from the stuff that happens behind the scenes. And so, yeah, that's kind of my process, I guess.
So Matthew, please tell us how you got started playing jazz. I mean, I know for a lot of us, jazz might not even be the first style of music we learn.
Yeah, definitely not.
And it'd be nice to know how you got into jazz, and also maybe who some of your early influences were.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, you know, growing up, jazz education was kind of in its infancy. I mean, we didn't have strong jazz programs in the high schools, and at least not where I grew up. You know, there was a jazz band in my high school, but it got canceled basically for the entire time I was in high school, because the entire trombone section was on the swim team and they didn't want to show up for rehearsal. So we had no jazz band when I was in high school. So I didn't know anything about, you know, but I did come from a musical family. My dad was a piano professor, a classical piano professor, and my mom was a voice teacher and a choir director. So I had piano lessons from, you know, when I was very young, the basic classical repertoire. And my dad also played cocktail piano, you know, kind of the background stuff for weddings and social events and things like that. You know, not jazz specifically, but, you know, I did learn from, he showed me a lot of that stuff. And I remember specifically at one point him giving me this book of tunes that is like, these are the songs you need to learn in order to do a gig, you know, and it was tunes like Spanish Eyes and Send in the Clowns and, wow. You know, the kind of the real hit songs of that time that people liked to have while they were, you know, sipping their cocktails or whatever at a party. So I learned some basic harmony from that, but it wasn't really until I got to college doing something completely different that I didn't really enjoy that I just kind of decided to, let me just take a jazz appreciation class just, you know, because I thought I'd probably like it. And I really did. I mean, the biggest thing I learned was how to listen to jazz and how to listen to music, how to be analytical about it. And what's going on when you hear, you know, what is the bass player doing? What's the drummer doing? What's the piano player doing? How does it all fit together? And it was like this secret world that, I mean, I'd heard this music all my life, but nobody ever gave me any clue as to just how deep and amazing it was. And so once that happened, it's like, okay, I have to get a jazz piano teacher. I have to learn how to do this. I have to, and that kind of put me on the path.
So you're just kind of hooked. You heard the music and started to understand it.
Yeah, it was the understanding it that made the difference to me, because, you know, I can specifically remember listening to it on the radio growing up, and I was always thinking, why does this drummer have to play his cymbal so much? You know, because I was learning to like rock and roll. I wanted to hear him hit the drums, and it's just like, but when I started to learn about how the cymbal beat works with the piano part and with the bass line, it made sense in a different way, and I came to just love it and appreciate it so much.
That's great. So you didn't actually go to college to be a music major at first?
Not at all, no. They almost didn't let me into music school when I finally did apply. It was because I had stopped playing piano, and, you know, I went and auditioned, and they were kind of like, okay, we're going to let you in, but, you know, you're kind of on probation. You have to get to this point by the end of the semester, or, you know, this is what we expect of you, and we think you can do it, but you need to do it.
So you really had to prove
yourself. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, at that point, it was just like I was so in love with the music that I was just practicing hours and hours, and it was not a problem at that point. So
that's great. Yeah. Well, let's hear some more music.
Sure. I thought I'd play another tune. This is one that I wrote a few years back. It's kind of more pulls from like a, I guess like a pop ballad sort of a vibe or mood, but with some kind of more modern harmonies tucked inside of it. Again, you know, it's kind of the singable diatonic melody with some other stuff kind of underneath. And we'll see how it goes. It's entitled I Remember When.
Thank you.
such a feel-good tune. You know, it's it kind of has maybe some gospel flavors in there.
Yeah, I guess so.
In here a little bit. Now, that hasn't really been recorded yet, has it?
No, it's not out on anything. Not out on anything yet. So
we've got to look for that one.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear that in my car.
It's a nice one. It's one of those. Yeah, I like playing it. It's, you know, it's. I almost hate to stop playing the melody in a way, because it's just kind of, it makes me really happy. It's like one of the, it's one of the ones that, you know, there's a couple of spots in there where I, you know, it's like some of my, personally, it's some of the, like, there's a couple of little details in the writing that, in the harmony and stuff that, it's kind of some of my favorite stuff that I've figured out. There's like some little inner voice movements that kind of slide and fall away that, it, like, for example, the second half, there's this, this, which kind of resolves for a second and then drifts right away from it. So there's these, like, these little inner voices that kind of hang on, like little suspensions that resolve but then keep moving, and it just kind of came together really nicely. And like I said, the melody just kind of keeps it together so well, I almost hate to play anything else in a few of those spots. So.
Yeah, it's a really joyful tune.
Thanks.
Well, I know that you spent some time in school in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that there's this kind of piano school or piano style that comes out of Memphis,
mm-hmm.
that I think a lot of people are unaware of. I certainly was for a long time. I mean, could you tell us about that piano style and who that involves and what a tremendous influence that has been on you?
Well, I went to graduate school at the University of Tennessee, and kind of didn't know what to expect when I got there. The director of the jazz program was Jerry Coker, who's one of the pioneers in jazz education. You know, and I wrote to the school, and I got this personal letter back from Jerry, back in the days when you had to use a typewriter to do it. It wasn't just shooting off an email, you know. And he introduced me to the jazz piano faculty there, a gentleman named Donald Brown. And I hadn't heard of Donald. And I remember I went and talked to the professor at the school, or, you know, the head of the jazz department where I was, and asked him about him, and he says, yeah, I don't know his name, but if Jerry Coker says he's great, he's really great. And so I did a little research, and I found that he played with the Jazz Messengers, with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers in the 80s, and, you know, found one of his recordings from that era, and said, yeah, this guy's awesome. Okay, I'm gonna go check this out. And went down and auditioned and got into the program, and Donald became a real mentor and inspiration for me. He's just this soulful, deep swinging, beautiful man who, you know, when you're in the lessons with him, you know, he's basically sitting next to you on the piano bench, walking a bass line, and he's got a pencil in his other hand. He's kind of tapping it on the bottom of the piano to be like the two and four of the hi-hat. And you just, It's in a way, it's like it's the most wonderful experience playing, because it's just swinging so hard. On the other hand, it's like I just want to stop and just listen, because this just feels so good. But that's, you know, he grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and there was a kind of a crop of piano players who came through there at that time. There was James Williams, Mulgrew Miller, Harold Mayburn, and then a trumpet player named Bill Mobley also through there. They were all in school together at the same time, and It's kind of this style of piano playing that it's very modern, but yet very traditional at the same time. It's kind of rooted in a lot of R&B, rooted in the blues and gospel and soul music. But at the same time, it's some of the most advanced music, like harmonically and creatively. It just ties... all of that, all of jazz history together into this amazing feel-good style. When I moved to New York, I ended up, because of my connection to Donald, I ended up befriending Mulgrew Miller and James Williams, two other piano players who were living in New York and through that scene. And they both took me under their wing and were also, you know, huge inspiration or, you know, huge influences on what I did, and did a lot for taking me around and introducing me to people and just, you know, wonderful, wonderful people. When Donald was playing in the Jazz Messengers, it was the same time that Wynton Marsalis and Branford Marsalis were in the band. And Winton later recorded one of Donald's tunes on one of his records in the 80s. I think it's Human Impersonator, I think is the name of the tune. I can't remember. Anyway, so there's like this whole connection to that whole Southern scene. And, you know, he's one of those guys that he'll come to New York occasionally and play a gig at, you know, one of the little piano rooms in New York. And all the jazz musicians come out to hear him. He's not the guy that is going to be headlining at the Blue Note and have, you know, hundreds of people who don't really know anything about the music hanging outside the door. It's just that message hasn't gotten across. But the musicians know who he is. You know, back in the days when he would play at Bradley's, you know, he'd be playing and you'd see, in addition to the other Memphis guys, you know, you'd see Kenny Barron and Tommy Flanagan and Hank Jones and just the host of piano players all sitting there at the bar checking this guy out, because it's just, it's such a personal, beautiful style of piano playing. And of course, the other piano player that comes out of Memphis that, you know, it's kind of a different era is Finest Newborn, another one that a lot of people don't, he's not on the radar for your average jazz fan. He was kind of like your Oscar Peterson, but probably with even more chops, even more technique, and also just as deep and soulful as those Memphis guys are. So and he was a big inspiration to that crop of, you know, the Donald and Mulgrew and James Williams, and on to pianists like myself. And so yeah, it's a really rich music heritage that, you know, you think of Memphis and you think of Memphis blues, or you think of Elvis Presley, or, you know, but there's this deep jazz tradition from there. I mean, even, you know, yeah, there's this deep piano player tradition specifically that comes out of there. It's amazing. I could play a Donald Brown tune for you. It's a tune that he wrote entitled Affaire d'Amour. It sounds like it sounds like a standard in a way. I mean, like, it's another one of those very memorable melodies, very singable. But it goes to some tricky places, and it has some little funny hooks in there that make it, you know, kind of challenging to play, and therefore not part of, you know, the everyday repertoire. But I'm gonna I'll give it a shot, and hopefully do Donald justice with this. It's entitled Affaire d'Amour. Thank you.
Yeah, I can hear those memorable melodies. You talked about those memorable melodies in your writing, and I have to believe that, that Donald must have been a huge influence.
Absolutely. I mean, I love his writing. It's that's definitely one of the easier tunes of his, at least to play this way. He's actually an incredibly creative solo piano player too, in a really unusual way. I mean, he'll sit down and he'll take a tune like that and just somehow turn it into a boogie-woogie tune, and then you know, the next chorus it turns into a stride piano tune, but somehow it still sounds like the same thing. You know, he's got so much history and so much depth to his style that he's someone to definitely check out. So.
Yeah, and as you play solo piano, I'm noticing now, I played this song with you before, but it's wonderful to hear you play it as a soloist because you have complete freedom. You can reharmonize something, you can change rhythms up, you can extend sections, and that must be really just freeing to be able to do that.
Yeah, it is. It's freeing in a way, and it's also more challenging in another way, because it's really up to you, in this case me, to generate all the interest and all the shape. I mean, yeah, you can go and wherever you want because you're on your own, but at the same time, I don't have the help of other musicians to help create the energy and the interest. So it's really fun. It's a fun style to play. I said, well, I get to do that often, so this is actually a lot of fun for me.
And I know that you've been talking about this for a while, and I'm hoping you're going to do this pretty soon, and that is record your solo piano record.
Yeah, I keep talking about it. It's, I think I feel more confident, in the group settings because I've done it so much more, and I feel like I have a voice there. And in a way, with the solo piano stuff, I feel like there's still some stuff I'm searching for as far as an identity, is finding that way to be yourself and to be unique. And that's a big challenge for any artist. And then anytime you kind of shift gears and do it something slightly differently, it's like, okay, how does that me apply to this other situation? And how can I embrace that and be true to it and authentic and all those things that haunt you when you're trying to get everything done, when you're trying to meet your goals and stuff. So,
well, I'd love to talk about that some more, because you've spent a fair amount of your career accompanying vocalists.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, you've worked...
That's what piano players... That's who, butters your bread. And, that's... Singers are the ones who get the gigs, because they have the face for the audience. They sell the tickets. And they have the words. People understand words. It's the key that makes a jazz performance accessible to the non-jazz audience. Playing for singers is a different thing because, they don't have buttons to push or whatever to make the notes come out. They have to hear it. So whatever you play has to support what they want to sing and make it clear enough that they're able to sing it, but yet be true to the story that they're also trying to tell, because there are words now that maybe there aren't when you're just playing an instrumental tune. I mean, a lot of times as instrumentalists, we're thinking of the words to a tune to help us shape them, but it's a very different thing when someone is actually speaking these words and you have to orchestrate them.
Well, you've gotten the opportunity to work with a lot of really great vocalists. I mean, just a few. You've worked for years with Stacey Kent. Mm-hmm. You've been with Curtis Stigers for over a dozen years, and along with Ann Hampton Callaway, Dee Dee Bridgewater, and I mean, these are some pretty, I would say, strong personalities.
Yes,
On stage certainly, but they have their thing. I mean, how do you keep your identity in that situation when you're trying to support them? How do you stay Matthew Fries?
That's a really good question. Wow, I wish I had a really good answer. It is a challenge. I mean, there are times when you're doing, when you're working with some people where you do feel like you're able to contribute more of yourself. It's more of a collaboration. And then there are times when you're playing with people who are playing in a very specific style and they need a very specific thing. And maybe, you can still find yourself in there. It may be just a little less obvious. Because ultimately, I mean, it's, the arrangements in jazz are really kind of suggestions. Yes, when you get to the third measure, there's a particular note and rhythm you need to play, but what happens leading into it?
Those are the, it's in those little cracks and stuff that you find yourself, I think. And so when you're playing for someone else, whether it's a singer or another instrumentalist, when it's his vision or her vision, you need to find the spots that you're clearly supporting what they want to hear and what they need to hear. And every person needs to hear, you know, different amounts of things and in different ways. You know, sometimes people are very specific and say, I need you to play these notes at this point in the tune every time. Hmm. And then other people are, you know, are a lot more loose about it. Say, I'll just play whatever you want. I don't care. So it's, and it's a pretty broad range, but there, but yeah, you do, I guess you do find, kind of find yourself in the cracks, in how do you orchestrate getting into those things that they need to hear, the mileposts, you know, it's like you're hiking through the woods and those little things they need are the mileposts. And well, if you decide you want to stay on the trail, or maybe you want to kind of wander around through the trees for a minute and come back, hopefully you find your way back in time.
You just have to make it back somehow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So. Well, I think you've done a great job of staying true to yourself and just continuing to find your voice and express your voice, at least what I've heard or uh-huh. been a part of. So I think it'd be great if we heard another song of yours. Do you have another composition of your own you'd like to play today?
Yeah, I thought I'd play this blues tune that I wrote. I think I wrote it when I was working in Switzerland for a couple of months. I was doing a little solo piano gig over there and had a bunch of downtime during the day and kind of came up with this little, it's kind of a blues, but it's a bit of a reharmonization of the blues. It's entitled Positive Attitude. And I think at the time it was kind of words I was speaking to myself, you know, that, you know, sometimes you do some of these gigs and you're not getting the response you want and you just kind of have to stay true and keep going through. And I think these were kind of I wrote this tune and slapped this title on it. I think it was, you know, encouragement for myself in a way. Thank you.
positive attitude. Such a soulful and bluesy tune, and yet it just feels so good.
Yeah,
like
thank you.
A lot of your tunes.
I think, I borrowed a bunch of that from a Donald Brown blues. Now that I'm thinking, now as I was playing it, I was suddenly remembering this other tune of his that I think that has a similar shape in the harmony. Hopefully, I'm gonna have to go back and listen to make sure it's not upright plagiarism.
I love that song. I'm so glad you played it.
Thank you.
Well, we haven't talked about Tri-Fi yet, the trio that both you and I play in,
mm-hmm.
along with bassist Phil Palumbi.
Luckily, he's not here right now. So
he's not here. the Tri-Fi has recorded 5 CDs over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you tend to write most of the music for the group naturally. I think maybe just because of your instrument, you play piano, and pianists tend to write a lot more in general. And I thought it'd be great if you played one of the songs that the band has recorded, but it'd be nice to hear it as a solo piece.
Yeah, it'd be a different thing, that's for sure. I thought I'd play the opening track. It's called Open Water, I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, it's from Staring Into the Sun, the most recent CD. And I'm anxious to hear this as a solo.
Great, I'll give it a shot.
Thank you.
That was really fun to hear as a solo tune, you know, as opposed to the trio tune that I'm usually
that's,
used
that's
to.
How it sounds in my house.
When you're practicing.
When I'm practicing, yeah.
One thing I really love about your tunes is that they seem to go into a lot of different directions and lots of twists and turns. It's not just the same thing throughout the song. Right? You have lots of different sections, a bass line here, an open swinging section here, and then a vamp, and and it's really interesting to listen to. Certainly it's fun to play.
Yeah. Some of the stuff I do, it's almost more of coming from like the pop music mentality of, you know, having a chorus and a bridge and a, you know, and a verse and a pre, you know, all those little sections that can be different. You know, sometimes you'll hear a pop song on the radio or something, and you think, wow, this is such a great song. And then there's just, it never has that bridge that lifts it up and takes it to the next level, you know? And so for me, even writing, you know, jazz tunes like this, there needs to be the response to the section that starts it out. You know, you have something at the beginning starting it out, it needs to end up going somewhere else. Sometimes it can be pretty far away from where it starts, but I think tunes need that. I mean, that's the way I write, the way I, in my head, they need them.
Well, let's make sure everyone knows how to hear more music and see some videos of you maybe and keep in touch and things like that. Folks can visit your website.
Absolutely.
MatthewFreese.com. Mm-hmm. Matthew and Freese is spelled FRIES.
Right.
It looks like fries.
It does look like fries.
And I love that your publishing company is called Not French Music, meaning not French fries, because it gets pronounced as fries a lot of times.
It does, yeah. So it's, you know, it's kind of my subliminal hint at the right way to pronounce my name. But,
right. So it's MatthewFreese.com or MatthewFries.com,
you can pronounce it however you want as long as you spell it right and you get there. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of, there's, you know, information about all the Tri-Fi stuff. There's another electric trio project that I'm involved in called 718, where I've, just in the last couple of years, I've gotten into playing basically Fender Rhodes run through effects pedals and loopers and wah-wah pedals and all kinds of crazy stuff. So I find in those, that one I'm spending more time twiddling knobs than I am actually playing notes in the keys, but it brings out my inner rock star. You know, I get to turn on the distortion pedal and pretend I'm a guitar player or something. So.
Yeah, well, that's a great trio as well. I mean, I've loved hearing you live, and I love the CD. So that's definitely something that everyone else should check out.
Yeah, so that's on the site, and then my schedule and all sorts of other things I'm doing. So
great.
Come
well,
busy.
My friend Matthew Freese, thank you so much for making time to be with us and share your music.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me here.
We heard music and conversation recorded at WMUK in the Takeda studio from Matthew Freese and Keith Hall, host of WMUK's Jazz Currents. Martin Clem was the audio engineer. To hear this program again or share it with someone you know, you can find it at our website, WMUK.org. I'm Kara Lawrence. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening to WMUK's Let's Hear It.